Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. Today is May 6th, a Tuesday, because on Tuesdays you get myself and Matt Neely, who keeps me really on track, on time, and on target, to spend 2 hours with you on the engagement hour. I know it's 2 hours, but we call it one a single engagement hour. So, you know, can't get over old habits. So how you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great.
By the way, this speed limit change seems to have gotten under your, under your craw.
They do it every year, Ted. This is the third time they've done it.
And
every year they say, we just kind of do a little harvesting of where we can lower speed limits.
Well, they've talked about speed slowing in the city of Tucson for a long time. They believe that. I mean, you look at Campbell, mm-hmm. and the medians with the trees in them, with everything else. One, it is absolutely the most dangerous place to try to make a left-hand turn,
right?
Because people are trying to figure out where they can pull over into that lane, where they can stop, where they can turn.
As evidenced by the planters that have been run over.
Absolutely.
Tire marks on them.
And the number of car accidents you see
there.
You see them routinely. So I took a look at those lists.
By the way, major north-south arterial, that was supposed to be a freeway at one time. Just to give a little perspective, Campbell was supposed to be a freeway at one point. One of the many freeways and expressways that never happened in Tucson.
And the irony of it is now you're slowing things down more and more and more. And we've all said the idea of a crosstown freeway has sailed. It's not going to happen.
It won't.
But what I've... What were my frustration with the city of Tucson, and this is kind of a regional transportation view as well, is pick two, and let them be fast.
So here we go, Ted. So Campbell, you referenced Campbell through the Speedway, especially the Grant to Prince corridor, mm-hmm. right there. Major north-south arterial, what's the next one they're picking on first? Now they're going to drop speed limits. So you and I have talked about this in general terms. They want to drop. I think you brought this one up the other day, but they want to drop it from Grant to Wetmore for 30 miles an hour. Is that what the story said? From 40 to 30, and then north. So then Wetmore to the river.
Down to 35.
Okay.
Going from 40 to 35, and that's. Of all the
sure,
ones,
it's all
going to
work out great.
That is one of the projects, and there's a lot going on in the RTA now. I don't know if we'll address that at all today. We may, but that is one of the roads that we are lacking funding on. And one of the challenges was that one. It originally was forecast as how many lanes?
Six lanes.
And now it's been approved to go down to four.
To stay at four,
adding turn lanes, adding a better center lane turn aisle.
And they still don't have enough money to not add lanes.
The problem is, that's the problem I was just going to get to. First is one of the ones that there's not enough funding for. So we've got, as a member of the RTA board, we've got to come up with a solution of what we're going to do with that. But it is already, at least during rush hour traffic, which I would classify from 7 to 10, and then it starts again at 2 to 5. It is a fully congested roadway.
Right.
It only gets worse at night, because when you go at night on there, there's no lighting.
The streetlights aren't working.
My wife is now, and we do a lot down at the University of Arizona. That's where she works. We go to the athletics. We see the games. Driving home, we will intentionally avoid first, because one, that's where a lot of the nighttime pedestrian accidents happen. And I can't tell you how many close misses I've seen on first. So the fact mm-hmm. that they're lowering first to 30, but it's right for us to question if that's not part of the plan. Everything to make it slower and slower and slower.
Well, and then the city in their memo, if you pull the memo from the council package, in the memo it says among the reasons that they are choosing to lower speed limits is because the condition of the roads.
Yeah,
so we have
decades
of deferred maintenance in the hundreds of millions. I remember an article 10 years ago saying maybe $2 billion in the region in deferred maintenance on the roads. That's how far behind they are, despite getting all this money from the state what's the gasoline tax?
The HERF VLTs.
HERF. So despite getting all that and Pima, well documented by our friend Chris, Pima County just used that to fund their overhead for their transportation department instead of putting it actually on the pavement. And so you have decades of deferred maintenance, and the cost for that is now, God knows when you get your your Grubhub order, because they're slowing down all the speed limits.
Yeah, it's the community eventually has to understand we are over a million residents in this region. We need to come up with something. I know Councilmember Cunningham has talked a couple times about doing flyovers all the way on golf links, so you can go from Houghton all the way to the freeway without having a single light. We've got to start exploring some of that, but what's that going to do? It's going to cost money. Yes. It's going to be a challenge. And the folks who argue about the different types of investments, we've kind of created this own problem for ourselves. The folks up north, 90 miles north in Maricopa, have three times said, hey, we voted for a regional transportation system and we're going to do it now. Now we're in the middle of an argument on a regional transportation system. We've tried it for one 20-year period, and despite the problems we're having now, every municipality would tell you the RTA brought in money that helped significantly improve the roads. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is the RTA brings in twice as much money as the feds and the state money funding that we get combined. So now we're really going to have a discussion, because people want either more transit or these kind of roads or that kind of roads. We've got to start addressing the fact that we are a large municipality, and we need to have roads that serve specific purposes. Every road doesn't need to serve everybody. Mm-hmm. Have some for folks who just want to get across town. Have some for more local arterial and connector roads. Have roads that are dedicated to bikes or to pedestrians. But trying to fix every road for everybody never works.
Well,
it doesn't work.
And the city council, for the last two or three years, what's the phrase that's come out of the city council? Road diets. They have no appetite for doing any of this. They want to actually reduce lanes, reduce road capacity. And let me tell you, while the mayor and the future congresswoman for life, because that's the safest district in town, while they were out protesting jobs in the Santa Rita Mountains from a copper mine that's been approved by the state. So while they're knocking down speed limits and road diets and saying, we don't want jobs in this, we don't want good paying jobs in this region. In Phoenix, this is on the 8 o'clock news, Waymo, they're expanding in Arizona, 239,000 square foot factory in Mesa. So the Phoenix metro area, hundreds of jobs. They're going to scale up production of their autonomous vehicles. And the Jaguar I-Pace, the Zeekr RT, it bolsters Arizona's tech economy in Phoenix, unfortunately. And this is all part of Waymo's plan to expand service to Atlanta, Miami, and Washington, D.C. They're already in Phoenix, San Fran, L.A., and Austin. So,
And Waymo's just released something that showed how safe and how much safer their self-driving vehicles are than the common public. That they had a good study done on that. Yeah. By the way, I'm betting these vehicles are going to need a lot of copper.
Right, exactly. So here in Tucson, we're fighting jobs, fighting copper that is vital to Arizona's tech economy. And we're like, well, we don't want freeways, and we're going to lower the speed limits on our surface streets. And up in Phoenix, they're like, you guys are irrelevant. Here's hundreds of jobs that are, I'm guessing, are going to be very well paying.
There's no doubt about that. Well, I didn't even get to my rant on TEP. And what's going on with them. We'll maybe get to that later. But today is going to be Chamber Day. I'm bringing in this morning, we're going to have with us Rob Elias with the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And then at the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to bring in Joe Snell. We'll talk to him about the Chamber of Southern Arizona and what they're going to do in the way of advocacy and growth. And we'll talk about with both of them about what they think needs to improve in this region as well. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Stay with us on The Morning Voice. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice 5 days a week from 7 to 9 on KVOI 1030. Five different hosts, five different formats, and five different topic areas. So I appreciate you joining me on Tuesdays, where we talk about civic engagement and how to get involved, and as well as a little politics and things that are going on in our community. We are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country, and for others, that includes service to our community. So today we're focusing on a couple chambers of commerce. This morning we're going to start with the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and then this the second hour we will go with the Chamber of Southern Arizona and bring on the leaders of those two organizations. So I'm joined right now by Mr. Rob Elias, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Rob, thanks for joining us today. We had to ask you and say, have I had you on the show before? And that answer was no. So that means we get to spend the first part of this hour talking about your journey, because I like to let the listeners hear how you got involved and how you ended up where you are. Because I doubt when you were playing baseball as a young man growing up, you were thinking that, hey, someday I'm going to be the CEO of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
Well, with that lead in, Ted, I want to change my answer and say yes, that I have been on the radio, because I prefer not to talk about myself and just talk about the work we do.
Give people a little background, where you grew up,
sure.
What you were, you know, things that occurred to you during your schooling and your education and any other ventures you may have had, like playing ball, and how it then brought you back into not only getting involved in your community, but running for office, and then what led you to the Hispanic Chamber.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Ted. It's a pleasure to be with you and on the air. Secondly, thank you for your service, not only in our military, but also for what you do in the community. You think you do an amazing job here, and you need to be commended for that. Thirdly, I want to wish a happy early Mother's Day to all the mothers out there coming up this weekend. So important that we say that, because I know my mom's listening, so I need to say that.
Well, if your mom's listening, then good. This will be a little gift to her.
So absolutely.
Tell us about life growing up.
So, grew up in Tucson, Arizona, born and raised here. And this is home and will always be home. And you're right. I grew up playing baseball. I was, I played a lot of sports, but baseball was always my first love. And that's just because my dad was a baseball player. My dad played college baseball at Northern Arizona University when they had a baseball team, was actually drafted by the Minnesota Twins, but did not go because he needed to work. And so he helped my grandfather at early on being a bricklayer. But he also, along the way, he tore up his knee pretty bad, was also drafted in the military, and could not serve because he already had multiple knee surgeries. So grew up, again, playing baseball. I was lucky enough to get a college scholarship to play at Pima Community College. Before that, went to Tucson High, proud Badger, and went on to play at Pima College, went on to play at the University of Arizona in 2000-2001 with some great teammates that I still keep in contact with today. And you're right, along the way, I did not ever think that I'd be running a Hispanic chamber. For those of you that know what I look like, I do not look like a typical Latino, but that's okay. We come in all different shades.
So after your baseball career finished, what was it that you what was your next venture?
Yeah, I actually, I have to start, Ted, by saying that I have my degree from the University of Arizona in political science. And the only reason that I got a poli-sci degree is, number one, I had enough credits for it, so I wanted to get that paper. Mm-hmm. And number two, I admired the way politicians, regardless of how you view them, good or bad, they know how to communicate with people, and they are effective in that manner. And it doesn't matter whether you're young or young at heart, they know how to speak to people, and their message resonates. And so I studied that, which led me into a world of marketing and branding and culture training and things like that, and deeply fell in love with culture and business.
And that was here in Tucson as well?
It was, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so you truly are Tucsonan through mm-hmm. and through, never really left to
no,
try anything
no,
else?
No, I did. I moved away briefly for a brief period of time and lived in Texas when I was playing professional baseball.
Okay.
And so I did that, you know.
Oh, you left off that professional piece.
Yeah.
So now, well, good. Now we tag that too.
Yeah, it was an independent team in Corpus Christi, Texas, I played for.
What was the nickname of that team? Because sometimes those independent teams have really good nicknames.
Oh, man, it was the Coastal Bend Aviators. And they're no longer there. But the name of the town is actually right outside of Corpus, called Robstown, Texas.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And so then you moved back to Tucson, got into the marketing. Mm-hmm. At some point, you decided to take that political science degree and actually run for public office.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that experience?
Sure. Well, my dad was an American history high school teacher. And so I had always grown up listening to politics or learning about American history, and I've always been enamored by American history and politics. The one thing that I love about politics is and call me naive or call me weird, but I definitely think that politics, when done properly, have the power to influence people's lives in a positive way. And I learned that you have to be open to talking to all people about all topics and all different angles. And that is truly what moves the needle, especially in places like Tucson, because so much of our politics is so much of how we live is controlled by policies and politics. So I thought, let me get involved in that a little bit more, learn a little bit more about how Tucson works, who are the players in the community, and see if we can move this thing forward, which pushed me to running for office for city council in 2019.
What was your big lesson learned from that, now that you're in a role where you're in doing advocacy and trying to influence elected officials? You ran for city council in Ward 1 as a Democrat, so it was in the primary. Lane Santa Cruz who's the current sitting council member, was your opponent. Mm-hmm. What was it through that campaign that you learned both about the political system and how we elect individuals, but maybe more importantly, what you've now carried into your advocacy role with the Hispanic Chamber?
Man, so many lessons in running for office. Number one, now Vice Mayor Santa Cruz and I get along really, really well. And she became a friend of mine during the campaign, even though we were running against each other. We had incredible open dialogue about what she believes and what I believe and what I think is right for Tucson, what she thinks is right for Tucson. And although we can disagree on some things politically, even though we're both Democrats, we understand that there's nothing wrong with disagreement. That's okay, as long as we're both willing to listen to one another, hear each other out, and possibly educate one another on what our stance is. However, one of the biggest things that I learned during that campaign that I have taken into my role now is to resist the urge to be impulsive. And just because somebody says something that we disagree with, we immediately, our defenses go up and we want to become more aggressive about why I think you're wrong and let me scream at you louder as to why I'm right. Politics doesn't really work that way. It shouldn't work that way. And too often we like to feel the need to be impulsive and just scream at you louder and say why you're wrong. And so one thing that I've tried to do really hard, when we are a nonpartisan organization, the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber, we listen to politicians from, you know, both sides of the aisle to hear what they're doing. You know, I have conversations with our senators, with Congressman Ciscomani, and sometimes we agree with what they're doing, sometimes we disagree. And when we disagree, we have the conversation of, what am I missing here? Please explain your side, because at this point right now, we don't agree with what you're doing. But if you can explain that to me, maybe educate me, maybe I'm missing something. And if you explain your point and we still disagree, then we can still disagree, and that's fine. I think that's what moves us forward.
Well, that's something we definitely have lost the art of in our politicians, is the both the conversation and then the collaboration, or the ability to give a little in order to get much. I mean, people have heard it on this show a lot of times. I'm a big Reagan fan. I'd love the 70, 30, 80, 20, whatever the number was. If you can get that kind of positivity from what you want, you should be willing to give up a little. But now we've decided in politics, it's all or nothing. And there is still more yelling.
Absolutely.
There is still more yelling. There still is more combativeness. So what brought you to the Hispanic Chamber? How did that interest, or how did it work?
Well, over the years, over the past 25 years or so, I've been in leadership capacities in various roles here in Tucson, whether that would be in the financial sector, working for a couple of credit unions, working in the hospitality industry, and learning about how that works and how that impacts dollars in Tucson. I worked at the Tucson Botanical Gardens and learned so much about, more than I ever thought I would learn about plants and nature and how they work together to make our region so special. And of course, along the way, I ran for office. And so I have all these tools in my tool belt of things that I have learned or picked up along the way that made me, I feel, the right candidate for this job. And some people may disagree with that, and that's okay as well. If you're not creating any enemies, I don't think you're pushing enough, huh, Ted?
There is some truth to that.
Yeah.
So you can hear the music starting to play in the background. When we come back, Rob, what I'd like to go down is one, talk a little bit about the name change, why, talk about the health and the state of the Hispanic Chamber, and then find out from your organization's perspective, what are the key issues you're working on this year, and what is it that you think this region needs to do to improve? So everybody, thank you for being with us this morning. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Stay with us through the bottom of the hour. Welcome back. It's 7:35. If you're on your drive to work and you're running late, take it nice and slow and make sure you get there safely and enjoy the ride and listen to a little bit more of the morning voice. I tell you one thing, when I first started doing radio shows, I always used to come and tell Matt, all right, Springsteen, I want more Springsteen, now even more Springsteen. Now, okay, play a little Petty. It is such a refreshing thing when I just don't tell Matt anything. Who would have ever thunk that I would have heard a Take Me Out to the Ball Game done by a mariachi group?
That was Sam Bush earlier.
Yeah.
That was Sam Bush, a mandolin player.
Mandolin player. Well, it sounded like a little mariachi to me from my take.
I like his spin on that one.
Yeah, no, it was really good.
Yeah.
And Rob had taken his headset off, so he didn't get to get the full tone, because when I first heard it, I said, okay, that's interesting. I looked over and I said, take me out to the ball. I've got to listen to this whole thing to see how it plays out. And that was great. So our guest this morning is a former professional baseball player. I'm going to start calling you that now. You're not going to live that one down. Former professional baseball player, Rob Elias, and now the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. So that's a recent name change. So what was the process behind that, and how has it impacted or influenced your membership and who you've got joining?
Yeah, that was something, you know, we were called the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and then we also had an affiliate chamber in Southeast Arizona called the Southeast Arizona Hispanic Chamber, and that was comprised of really every city that's in Southeast Arizona fell under that umbrella of the Southeast Arizona Hispanic Chamber, which was also the umbrella of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. Because I got tired of explaining that, I thought, why don't we just change the name to reflect the communities that we actually serve, the region that we actually serve? And from what I'm told, one of my predecessors, Leah Marquez Peterson, who's been a dear friend and supporter for many years, had attempted at one time to do that, to change the name to Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber. I haven't spoken to her about that, so I don't know if that's actually true or not. That's just what I'm told. I had a conversation with the board about it early on, had conversations with our Region 2 director, who is down in Sierra Vista. He thought it was a fantastic idea, so we started the process. And it took us about maybe about a year and a half before we actually said, all right, we're going to do this. But we had been working on it, you know, ongoing, and we officially made the change in January.
And so now you're the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and you don't just have a second regional office. You've actually got a third as well.
We do, yeah. Our Region 3 director is based in Thatcher, Arizona, and so he handles Region 3, which is Graham County and Greenlee County.
So we talked momentarily before we came on the air about how membership's doing, and you said things are surprising, and they're growing, and to some places where some people would not necessarily understand the purpose of the chamber. It's not always just regional. It's business-oriented. You get people from all over the place, but what's your membership looking like now?
Yeah, it's going really, really well, and I'm not surprised that our membership's doing well. We're honored to have the amount of people that are investing in our organization, which we then reinvest in their organizations. But one of the regions that we didn't, or areas that we didn't see the amount of growth in the past that we currently are now, are actually businesses from Mexico, businesses in Mexico that are wanting to do more business in Arizona. And this has been going, I've been at the chamber 4 years now. And that happened very early on when I made I went down to Sierra Vista and I made I gave a talk, and there were some businesses from Mexico that attended, and they said, we want to do more business in Arizona. So we've been just growing exponentially down there, and just organically. We're not trying to do that. Our marketing efforts aren't like necessarily putting out advertisements in Mexico. It's just happening organically, and we're pretty proud of that.
Have you thought about maybe doing a little bit more marketing down there, even expanding that? We know in this region how important the trade that we have, cross-border trade we have with Mexico. You know, we hear a lot about the maquiladoras and the movement of vehicles and getting things out, but it's even more grassroots than that. There are folks that come over here just to trade on a small scale. I mean, I've heard a story about somebody who does a 1,000 tortillas every day in Nogales, and the impact tariffs are going to have on him are crippling, because it's not a big business, but it comes across daily to do business in Arizona.
Oh, 100%. And I think one of the things that we've been very aware of and doing a great job of is increasing our influence in Mexico, specifically in the state of Sonora. And, you know, which is a great segue into an event that we have coming up on Thursday. It's a sold out event. And we're calling it the Arizona Sonora Economic Forum. And this is just a conversation, two topics covered by two people. And those two people are Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs and Sonora's Governor Alfonso Durazo. And the two topics that we're going to cover are economic development and trade, because people don't understand how our economies are so intertwined that it's almost impossible for us to disconnect them now. And so we need to consider the border as a gift, not as a burden. And our livelihood in Tucson, in Tombstone, in Benson, in Bisbee, and everywhere in between, it depends on Mexico.
So what is your sales pitch when you go, not sales pitch per se, but what is it that you like to let your members, or that attracts members to you? What is it that you're offering? What do you do for them that makes this so valuable?
I think, along with so many other incredible chambers in the region, that we do really well is we try to live at the intersection of commerce, culture, and community. And so those are the big three things that we are always talking about. We can have fantastic commerce. We live in a culture rich environment in Southern Arizona, and why not lean on that? You know, with our indigenous roots, with our native, with our Hispanic roots, let's talk about that. Let's lean into that, and let's talk about its beauty and why people want to move here and bring their business here and do business here. So I think that's one of the biggest differentiators that we do. Another one is that we do feel that business is personal. And, you know, I've heard the phrase growing up that, oh, it's just business. Business is business. No, it's not. Business is personal to us. So when people join our chamber, we're proud of that. And we don't take that lightly.
So before we go to a break, I wanted to ask you, do you have numbers? Do you have numbers of what you believe the trade and the business, the Hispanic business community, both south and north of the border that interact, what's the value you put on those businesses?
Well, I think one of our great partners, Felipe Garcia at Visit Tucson, had said a number of years ago that the Mexican tourism brings annually over $1 billion. And that's not an insignificant amount of money. And we are going to highlight some of those statistics at Thursday's event. We'll be putting some of that stuff on our website as well. That's not just from Visit Tucson, but from Arizona Office of Tourism that talks about and gives actual metrics to what are the numbers are for trade. What's the monetary value and what's the influence and impact on Southern Arizona?
And I know you were very concerned when Prop 414 was going on in the city of Tucson. Now, I've got some concerns about the changing in the bed tax for that same reason. We want to be a place where you want to encourage people to come. And when it comes down to it, a lot of those folks, especially the smart Mexican shoppers that come up and do a lot of shopping up here. If they see an opportunity to save money driving another 60 miles, they'll do it. We forget that sometimes. It's not like we've got a captive audience. It's organizations like yours that have to sell that, no, this is why you want to stop here, or in even Benson, or in, you know, Sierra Vista, or somewhere in Southern Arizona. This is why you don't need to go to Maricopa.
So, yeah, absolutely. There are some true gems in this region. And if people want to drive to Phoenix, then fine. Yeah, I understand that. But don't just get on the road for the destination to be Phoenix. Stop off in Tombstone, stop in Bisbee, stop in Tucson, stop in Douglas, and see some of the beauty that are in those regions. And it's been the joy to go down there. You know, I was in Sierra Vista not too long ago. I was in Safford. I'm going back to Safford next week, and in Bisbee and Douglas and Nogales and everywhere in between. And they're beautiful places.
I'd highly encourage people to get it. I went out to Bisbee. We had a state transportation meeting there last week or last month, and you get to see communities that you really don't understand unless you go to them. So you've really got to, I encourage everybody to get out and see some of the smaller towns in this region. So that's the voice of Rob Elias, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. When we get back after the break, we're going to talk about what your areas of concern and your areas of advocacy that you see need to be worked on to continue to thrive and grow the business and the community here in Southern Arizona. So appreciate everybody joining us on the Morning Voice this morning on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to the Morning Voice. That's Matt Neely picking the jams as we move from segment to segment. Guest this morning is Rob Elias with the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. We've been talking a lot about the chamber and your journey here. Let's get down to some of the more, not difficult, but the more interesting conversations. What are the things that you see that trouble you in our region that need to be addressed to both improve the mission of your chamber and the mission of the quality of life here in Southern Arizona?
I was hoping you were going to ask me some difficult questions, Ted. This is a this is a heavy one. Number one, I think we cannot you can't ask me that question and not talk about homelessness and mental illness issues that we see plaguing the streets right now. And it's been going on for a number of years. And it does have an impact on how people live. It has an impact on potential and prospective businesses that want to come to Tucson. When they come to town, they see things like that. And it's definitely a challenge. And I know people like to point the fingers at government to saying, do your job. And we're of the belief that not every job, not every problem is meant to be solved by the government. And it certainly they play a role in it, but it's not just their responsibility alone. Mental illness is a huge problem, not just in Tucson, but in various, in every city across our nation. So more needs to be done with that. And, you know, there's a multi-pronged approach that we could implement to make it better, but we're never going to solve it. As long as there's free will in the world, people are going to be looking for reasons to use substances, and it's a sad thing. Another thing that we think that the community could use is certainly a regional transportation plan, something that benefits the region as a whole, that makes the movement of people from one place to another more accessible. And I think the work that the RTA board is doing is admirable. I think it is not easy work. I'm preaching to the choir. I know that. But we have to have some sort of plan that addresses how we move people from place to place and what those roads look like. And my hope is that we're not building those roads based on what is the immediate need, but what is the need 20 years down the road, 25 down the road.
Well, you've laid two topics out there that I'd love to explore both of them. Let's go right with that RTA one right now. We know it's that trying to get to a plan. And the point you just made there at the end is not for the immediate need, but for the one down the road. We talked at the open of the show that there's multiple streets that the city of Tucson's going to vote on today to reduce the speed limit, because of safety, because of road conditions, and they even acknowledged that the road conditions were part of it, because of other things. if you were king, what would you change in our current approach to our roadway and transit system throughout this region?
Oh, man, easy one, and I say this half-jokingly, the indirect left. I have conversations with Sam Credio, the director of Transportation City Tucson. I'm like, man, what are these things?
Well, the good thing about that is it's not a RTA thing. You don't need to fix that. That's a municipality. You know, and that's the challenge I have with all the indirect lefts and the Michigan lefts and anything else we put out there, is you don't know what you're facing when you come to a light. I still have to I pause, and I drive around this town a lot, but I always pause every light and go, okay, is this going to be, what's this going to be for this left turn?
Right.
And there's confusion.
And you live here. Yeah. Imagine what people who are visiting from here. I mean, you see them stopped at an intersection trying to make a left, and people are just honking at them. And it doesn't matter if you can have 40 signs out there. They're just not going to pay attention.
So let's expand that a little bit, because that's a very specific issue on something. How does the Hispanic Chamber play in advocacy? Do you take positions on state legislative proposals? How do you engage with your municipalities? What's kind of your approach to advocacy to make change for this region?
Yeah, we engage at all levels of government, whether it's local, regionally, state, federal.
You mean like having two governors from two different countries speaking at the same meeting?
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, for sure. We do take positions on a number of policies, and we'll either support or oppose, or we'll remain neutral or just abstain if we feel that that's appropriate. But one of the biggest things that I've learned in this role is that it is my job to poll the audience. And what that means is to have conversations, not with all of the 1,500 member businesses that are members of our chamber, but as many as I can, and say, what are your thoughts on this? Because I, at the end of the day, represent them. That's what I'm tasked to do. And so that's what I try to do with every conversation.
That's a great point. It's I know, as leading an organization, advocacy organization, that also it's I represent the members. Luckily, I've never had to advocate for anything I didn't believe in. But there's been a lot of things we haven't done I would have liked to have done. So
for sure.
So who knows what those next steps will be? I want to go back to the mental health and the drug crisis and the homelessness. Obviously, there's been numerous tragedies recently, killings and a brutal sexual assault. Has the chamber taken a position at all on both free bus, free transit, and what you think could fix some of the problems that we've got that's leading to the violence?
We have not taken an official stance on free bus fares. I certainly have an opinion on that. I'm not going to share that on the air because.
Oh, come on! You can put out the disclaimer.
Oh, I certainly can, but I'm not going to get ahead of my board of directors. That's not, as you know, as someone who works for a board, we're not going to do that. We do have some deep concerns about what that's doing for the community, but we also acknowledge a lot of the good that that's doing for the community at the same time. And so we can't ignore or neglect or, again, be impulsive on a lot of these decisions. We have to look at it from a holistic level, not from a singular one. And I think the free bus fare is going to be fixed here pretty soon.
Yeah, I saw Councilmember Cunningham came out on last Friday and officially said he wants to reinstate bus fares. He says apparently his text messaging's picked up a lot now on it as well. One last thought that I want to leave with you is 1257. It's at the state legislature, SB 1257. It's in the House. It will provide Pima County the opportunity to be the test bed, literally the only county in the state that is able to keep folks who are under the influence of narcotics for up to 5 days and try to get them to a state of mind that they can make a good decision on their behalf. If you're willing, pick up the phone, call the speaker, get them to push that one forward.
I appreciate
Rob, this has been great. I told you the time flies. We're going to have you back to get into a deeper dive. Thank you. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, and I look forward to talking to you again. Good morning and welcome back. You are listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your Tuesday host, Ted Maxwell. Tomorrow on Wednesday, you'll have Grant Kruger with Food for Thought. And as I always say, a lot of politics. Reached out to Grant. We'll see if we know by the end of the show who his guest for tomorrow is. That was great conversation with Rob Elias, the president and CEO of the Chamber, the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. We heard a lot of great news coming out of Phoenix with things like Waymo going on. And our next guest hopefully will be one of the drivers behind making some of those announcements possible down here in Southern Arizona and in the Tucson region. And I'm joined on the Morning Voice Live line. Actually, we don't have a real name for it yet, but we'll come up with something. But I'm joined by Joe Snell, the president and CEO of the new, you've got to say new first, the new organization, the Chamber of Southern Arizona. So, morning, Joe. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's another beautiful day with a little bit of rain in Southern Arizona. We don't get that all the time, so it's nice waking up to that.
Great. Yeah. I'm in the car, though, so it's not my favorite driving in the rain.
Yeah, well,
thanks for having me.
be careful driving out there. You know, try not to get you too fired up. Joe, you've been on the show with us before, so a lot of the folks know your story, how you came to Tucson, and a lot of your past experiences, both in economic development as well as in chamber operations. But last week was the official kickoff of the Chamber of Southern Arizona, the merger of Suncorridor Inc. and the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. And that obviously has been working for several months since the initial announcement. Can you just kind of give us the background of how that came about and why you feel that it's such an important thing for this region?
Yeah, Ted, and you're right. It goes back a few months, but it's really been a whirlwind. We went from meeting to dating to getting married in 7 months. So it's been a pretty fast in terms of a merger. But the merger, I feel, is pretty historic. Historic for a couple reasons. One, it's historic because we actually got it done. And as most people know, and I've done a lot of mergers in my career, they rarely can go to fruition. They usually get killed before they get started because of stuff like egos and turf wars, and people get into it and then they just can't get it over the finish line. But this was a good idea, and I'm very proud of the two organizations that put some of that stuff on the shelf and focused on what the objective was. So very pleased. We started this process back in October, and we became one entity in early April. So a very quick process, and within 7 months and one signature, we became a very powerful organization, very unique for not only Southern Arizona but Arizona. I think a couple things that had really driven this, and that one was really the business people in Southern Arizona. We launched about a year and a half ago a competitiveness study, which included focus groups with literally hundreds of local businesses, and we would ask them the questions of where the gaps were, what was important, and the number one issue that came out of those focus groups was they would like to see better unification among the business groups to deal with stuff like economic development and weigh in on policy, that we were diluted to a great degree. So that, in long and short of it, was somewhat, we feel like, a mandate from the businesses, large and small, that said, please, let's get more unified. The time has come. So that's what really drove that. Some external forces, outsiders that influenced decisions in economic development, were saying the same thing, a little bit of, we would like you to coordinate better. So that really was the impetus to start the discussions, and it actually just made sense. So that's really the background on it, Ted.
So obviously for the last several years, more than several years, over a decade, you've had the combination of Trio, and then you did a name change and a rebranding and a refocus for Suncorridor Inc. Your organizations have been the driver predominantly of economic development. So let's talk about how do you think the chamber will now allow you to be more successful on the economic development side of the house?
Well, I think the economic development side is somewhat unchanged. You know, I think economic development's changed dramatically, I would tell you 10 years ago, what we were exclusively focused on the recruitment expansion of industries, mainly the recruitment of industries in here. That's why the focus on Caterpillar and Raytheon's headquarters and stuff like that. In the last decade, though, we've seen a massive change where there's still recruitment going on, but literally there are thousands of jobs in every market, including this market, going unfilled. And so, you know, it's great that you want to recruit companies, but we better help the companies locally fill these jobs. You've got, you know, high-tech, high-wage jobs in the thousands that are unfulfilled for a lot of reasons. So economic development is going to be a very much of the DNA of this new group going forward, a little broader focus. But I think the other side of it is it's allowing us to look at the competitive issues and maybe weigh in on a little bit of, from the policy standpoint, some of the potential opportunities and solutions to what's hurting us for not closing certain deals and getting certain things done. So I think that'll be a nice combination, and then allows us to work with other partners as well.
Well, you know, I'd love to talk about the advocacy side of it a lot, since that's what SLC does, and in coordination with the other business organizations. Well, but I don't. There's a comment you just made that is something that caught me a little off guard, and I want to follow up on it. And that is that we've got thousands of vacant, high quality jobs right now in Pima County. And to your point, it's hard to attract new companies if we can't fill the positions of the current companies. What can you expand a little bit on that, Joe? What do you think the issue is, and how do we need to go about improving that?
Yeah, well, you know, I said for years, labor drives all market decisions. And that was true in the late 1980s, but it is even more so coming out of COVID. So I will say this, this issue of vacancies is a national problem. If you went into every market, they'd say the same thing. So it's not unique to us, but we're focused on us. So I think a lot of this goes, Ted, we have a supply and demand problem. We have more demand than we do supply of workers at this point. Some of it's demographics. Some of it, we just have massive numbers of baby boomers heading to retirement, leaving the workforce, and not enough availability of workforce to fill the jobs behind them. And frankly, that's one of the issues that the business community has screamed for is immigration reform, so that we can legally get workers in here and it helps with the economy. We've always grown this economy through in-migration. So I think there's a math problem that we face. The other problem is a skill set problem. We have got to ensure that we get the people, our population, skilled up to fill the needs. And I think we're in a very good position because of Pima Community College and the U of A, even beyond our competition, to do some of that. But it's really paramount. And I think there's other issues that we're going to have to address in this new world order, if you will. But I do. It is a really big reality that the demand far is outstripping the supply, or at least the skill set of supply at this point.
And that's the voice of Joe Snell, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Southern Arizona. And I think you brought up a great point. PCC, the centers of excellence, the targeting of the jobs, recognizing different organizations in conjunction with the University of Arizona is a large part of our solution. As you enter the advocacy role, though, we also have the K-12 education system.
Yep.
How do you see playing in that space, or what do you think needs to significantly improve in that region to improve on a 71% graduation rate countywide?
It's a great question. I don't know exactly the role the chamber will play. There's a lot of groups in that space, and we don't want to be duplicative, but we do want to be enhance that. So I don't know specifically. We've only been in business about 3 weeks, but I will say this, that you're right. Both those rates need to come up, as well as our college graduation attainment rates. They're too low, and it's hurting us. So we see education and supporting education is very critical. But I think you know, in the new chamber, we're not always going to lead. We might follow because there's some good programs out there. But we have to assess that a little bit. But to echo what you said, it's a very important piece. I will say, you know, there's a lot of issues though. Education's one of them. You know, stuff like childcare, the affordability of childcare. You know, if we can be a community that can figure the solution around helping our people with some affordability and out of the box solutions with childcare, I think that's going to give us a leg up. I tell the story, my oldest daughter moved here with my grandchildren, and she said to me one day, can you help us with childcare? And I said, you know, just not even thinking, of course we can. And my wife said, you know, Joe, do you know what we agreed to? And little did I know, I thought it would be a few dollars a month. It's really a mortgage payment. And that's prohibitive. And that keeps people out of the market for, you know, very qualified people that we need. So I think those are the type of solutions that, in addition to education, we're going to need to focus on if we're going to win this game.
Absolutely. For a minute there, I thought you were going to tell me that you and your wife were going to do the child care. Now, that would have been a whole different experience.
Yeah, that's a whole different scenario. Yeah, well, I think my wife, yeah.
So before we go to the break,
yeah,
can you tell listeners, why did you select the name The Chamber of Southern Arizona?
Well, we felt the Chamber brand was important. It represents... Chamber's a well-known brand, you know, going back couple hundred years in this country. Everybody knows a Chamber of Commerce. And the reality is when companies reach into a community, they always think, where's the local chamber? Where is the local chamber? And so that was an important to maintain that Chamber brand. It's also important because of our connectivity to the U.S. Chamber, which is the leading business voice across the country. And that's an important connection with advocacy. The third piece with it is the Chamber of Southern Arizona is important because we're not just a Tucson chamber. We're a regional chamber serving all of Southern Arizona. So that's what really went into it. And frankly, I always liked the Sun Corridor brand, and we'll still keep that in some aspects of marketing. But nobody can really pinpoint where that is in a map. And they will be able to see where Southern Arizona is.
Well, that's Joe Snell again, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Southern Arizona. And we're going to go to a break right now. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about the chamber's not new role, because Tucson Metro Chamber was always involved in advocacy, but we'll talk about what the advocacy from the Chamber of Southern Arizona will look like. Stay with us on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Apparently, it's a good thing to know that Grant Kruger actually listens to the show. I ask who his guests are, and texts come flying through. So tomorrow, joining Grant will be Chad Vargas, owner of Wings y Mas, and Colby Quist, the owner of Quist Sandwiches, which opened up last week on the Sunshine Mile on Broadway. So there's a new food source that is now available to us, and that's a little bit of economic development growth. And we've got Joe Snell, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Southern Arizona. So, Joe, appreciate you being on again with us this morning. Obviously, economic development's been in your blood for the last couple of years, and you'll continue to push that from the chamber. A lot of the same Sun Corridor structure and organization is now embedded inside that chamber. But something new for you, at least, not necessarily for the folks you've got working with you, is going to be to jump into the advocacy pool. So is that exciting for you? Is you dreading it a little bit, or what are you thinking about that new role you're going to have to take?
No, I'm excited about it. And frankly, personally, I've got a long history of that role, just not in Tucson, because the way the former organization was set up, we were just not really set up to even address that. So, but personally, I have a long background in it. And I think it's, this is long overdue to have that strong connection between economic development and those issues that we face, and the ability to advocate for change on that in a speedy way is long overdue. I'll also, say that I think all the listeners understand this, and it's really evident that the future economy is just being shaped by complex issues around labor and lack of, as we said, technology, the crazy changes going on with AI and all this stuff, and politics really influencing things that we haven't seen in the last 30 years. So I think it's absolutely, if we're going to have a chance of winning, the successful regions are going to need to be think out of the box completely with their solutions and the type of ways that we address it. So basically for us, it was like the new reality is requiring that we're going to have to develop new bold solutions and provide leadership that is that we haven't seen before if we're going to have a sporting chance. And I think some of that is, you know, advocacy to me doesn't always mean hitting you over the head with a stick, but we've got to make sure we have the dialogue to say that's not good for us. That has dire consequences if we you know, go down this road and pass a policy that will prohibit our growth. We just want to be a group that provides solutions, alternatives to stuff. I do think more than anything, it's a group to get ahead of the curve to say, like I said, with childcare, if we get ahead of an issue, does it put us in the position to win? Energy. I love what the U of A is doing with their fusion technology. That is a game changer. If we can be the leading market in providing a solution to the energy needs, which this world is gobbling up at a rate that we have never seen, we're going to win all day long. So those are the kind of things I see as advocacy. A lot of people define it as, oh, we're going to go to war with everybody. It's just not the case. I mean, we'll fight stuff if it doesn't make sense, but we also, you know, I think more importantly, want to be on the right side of shaping and directing a good policy to make sure we can win.
Well, that's a very true statement. There's two sides of the advocacy. One is trying to help encourage that strong policy that may or may not exist. And then the other one's fixing the issues. One of our listeners texted me and said they were at a Sun Corridor meeting when the CEO of Raytheon said that the number one economic development in Tucson needs to tackle its roads. That seems to be an issue. We've got the RTA reauthorization coming up. What is your position, if you've taken one, or what do you think your position with from the chamber is going to be regarding RTA?
Well, our position is we need a regional solution to our roads. We have maintained that for the last 20 years. Communities that tackle all their issues regionally are the communities that are going to win long term. There's not enough strength to tackle things independently. So we are we're new to the game, but roads are a top driver. Roads and infrastructure. There's a lot of drivers, but yeah, our roads have not been in great shape for the last 20 years. And so it's, if anybody asks me, do you support any initiative to fix the roads? I support them all, because it's that important. So, I really hope that the RTA does, get renewed and reauthorized or whatever pathway it is, because we think it's important.
Well, I personally will greatly appreciate that support on that front. I think the regional approach is absolutely the only way to address transportation, because roads, buses, cars, vehicles, they don't recognize city or county lines. It's got to be a system. And so I'm looking forward to your support on that one. We've got a long way to go, but I still think it's viable and we can get there. Let's jump ship to another one. You brought up energy real quick. And Joe, I appreciate you taking this call, because I'm putting you on the spot on a couple of them. You came from Colorado. There was an op-ed in today's paper from a gentleman who had lived and worked in Colorado in Boulder. I may have even been on the council, if I recall, who pointed out that Boulder tried for over 10 years to buy out their electric company. $30 million, two sales tax later, they gave up that opportunity. What's your thoughts on the current study and the current direction the city of Tucson is in looking at buying TP out and making it a governmental electric company?
Yeah, you know, we haven't looked at it or taken a position on. I've heard about, you know, some studies that have happened with that. I would very, very much caution this community of going down a road like that. You know, without having looked at the study, I mean, I just could not hardly fathom the reality that there's enough money to buy out the infrastructure that TEP's invested. I just, you know, there's a lot of ways to solve our issues, but you know, we're a community that we're needing every dollar we can find, and I'm not sure that would be wise. I probably would lean into really having some caution on something like that. Like I said, we haven't delved into it. We haven't taken a position because I know it's just been some general studies. But from my past experience, be very, very cautious of those kind of moves because I think they could backfire very quickly.
So as you said, you're not at that point yet where you're ready to jump in and take some positions, but you're getting there. You've got you've kept Michael Guyman on as the chief advocacy officer in your organization. What other changes do you see the chamber doing and how you advocate?
Well, okay, a couple things. We're going to really prop up the policy council. We want to be very sophisticated. We want to put a lot of money into research. We're going to look at issues like polling because we can't be effective unless we can do effective polling.
Yeah, hey, Joe,
Joe,
I hate to do this. I put you in a bind. Bad host. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. Stop.
Okay.
Think about that thought over the break because I would like to go back to it.
All right.
Everybody,
you got it.
Please come back to us. We're on 10:30 The Voice, and we'll see you after the break. Welcome back. This is Ted Maxwell. I paused there a little bit. I like that lead-in song, so that's great, Matt. I appreciate it. Matt Neely is behind the glass, keeping us on time and on target. Remember, The Morning Voice from 7 to 9 every day of the week. Five different hosts, Lydia Aranda on Mondays. You've got me on Tuesday, and then Grant Kruger on Wednesdays. Tom Moulton, who will tell you everything about attractions and what's going on inside the city of Tucson. And then on Friday, we close the week with Dr. Ed Ackerley talking about both business success as well as the wonder of the University of Arizona. So I'm going to start off this segment, Joe, with an apology. Sorry for putting you in a position where I realize I asked a much longer question, answered question than needed, and I can't believe you couldn't finish that in 35 seconds.
Yeah, well, I just talk, so I can't. Yeah, no worries. Yeah.
So let's go back to that a little bit. So what the structure that you're setting up, and you know, you've outlined a couple things on how the chamber's approach to advocacy is going to be. So how do you see that playing out for the new chamber?
Yeah, well, so three thrust areas: economic development, something I didn't mention, which is really critical to this. Small business focus. We have got an army of 1,500 small businesses, and that's really critical to connect with all this. And then third, you know, making sure that we have some advocacy to make sure we're competitive and supports good economy. So with that, we want to be thoughtful and sophisticated addressing these complex issues. So some of this is going to be research. I said, you know, polling. We want to know what people are thinking. We don't want to be reactive on this. We want to try as best we can to be proactive to get a handle on issues and ahead of issues. So we're going to put some calories into that. The other part of it is making sure that once we do have a sense of where we need to go and that we're aggressive with it. So for example, we've got two elements to this organization that are, I think, the best parts. One being we have this Emerging Leaders Council, which we're going to put a lot of effort in. We have got to start looking to the future. So we're going to be turning to all these companies, large and small, and saying, listen, let's develop your leaders and let's get them engaged at all levels. And I can tell you most of the CEOs in the area are excited about this. They're going to put several of their young executives through this council, and it's going to help us maybe fill some of those jobs and create a little bit of energy. The second piece with this outreach is, for example, we're going to go to D.C. in the fall. And I was just out there with a small group, and we ran into Phoenix Chamber that had about 30 people on the ground, and the San Diego Chamber of all groups had 160 business people working all the departments in Washington. And that's sort of our vision, for example, at the federal level. We're going to do it at all levels. We're going to mobilize this army that we have, and we want to be out there and these young leaders, because I think it's important that our policymakers hear from us and know what's important for us. So we're going to, you know, it's time to wake up this army a little bit to be able to weigh in. So that's sort of our approach in general to advocacy. But again, it's not really a closed fist approach.
We don't want to have to be there. We want to be in a position to help solve the region's biggest issues.
Well, I greatly look forward to continuing those conversations. I know we've had some of them before, and there are some places we are full agreement, and there's some we vary a little bit, but it's not so much on the issues, it's on the approach of how to be successful. I'm a big believer that we need more voices, not less, down in Southern Arizona. But to your point, we need a single message. And so I look forward to continuing to work on that front. One other question before I let you go on with your day is, one of the big things that we talk about in advocacy is we work with elected officials and we try to influence elected officials. Is the chamber, what role are you going to take in the election space? Are you going to continue to grade them like the Tucson Metro Chamber used to do? Or are you going to weigh in and take positions on candidates?
We are not going to endorse candidates. That's absolutely something we've laid out. We're not going to endorse candidates going forward. We're going to be issue focused. That's really where we see our interplay on advocacy is focusing on the issues. And there's a lot of groups that do a lot of candidate evaluation, candidate grading. We haven't come to a complete decision on that, but we're really not in the business of picking winners and losers with the candidates. That's up to the electorate. But what we are in the business of is helping shape good policy and influencing the policymakers that we do have in office.
And I think that's a critical piece because I've been encouraging for a long time getting that economic development voice. And that's, I think it's an important piece. If we're not being as successful as we can be in that space, or if there's different segments that we can improve on, we need the voice from you as the economic development organization on what needs to change. So look forward to that. Now, there's a lot of other economic development organizations. County, city's got one. The tech park. Do you see any change on how you work within that ecosystem?
I do not. No, they're all valuable, just like the other advocacy groups are valuable. Everybody's got a role to play on this. This will help us to you know, we're going to focus on being the best chamber we can, first and foremost, but we're going to work with these other groups. I don't see it changes. I think it'll help us better coordinate. And, you know, we serve a unique role when we talk about other economic development groups, for example. And really, people ask all the time, what's the difference between you and, let's say, the city's economic development? Well, I think two things. One, we are client-driven. In other words, we're looking out for the best interests of that company. Caterpillar, when they come to town, we're telling them how to navigate the system, where municipal economic development is, they're doing some of that, but they're also looking out for the best interest of the municipality. The other thing that really is probably a little bit different is we operate on confidentiality. We're not a FOIAble group as a private group, so we can get into some very sensitive information that, frankly, the government groups cannot. So there's a role for all of us. Ours is just a little bit different. So I don't see any change.
And can you talk about that last part, the FOIAbility? I wasn't planning on asking this question, but I know it's come up before. You do still, as a chamber, and a lot of chambers do, take governmental funding. So you are getting some funding from the county. How do you continue to keep that lack of FOIAbility despite having government funding? Is there, what's the trick to that?
We've looked at these models across the country. For one, we segregate the funding that we do, and it's only used for marketing purposes. There's no salaries, no travel put into those funds, so it's segregated. The second thing is it's no different than a contractor that would contract a service with the city to build something. They're still a private group. You know, it's a small percentage of our overall budget, so it's. You know, it's not like we are 95% government funded. That would change the thing. It'll be less than 20% in most cases. So it's like a contractor building a road because they receive public funding to do an outsourced service doesn't mean they're a public agency. So we're still a private agency. We're not FOIAble.
Well, that's the voice of Joe Snell, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Southern Arizona. the newest, largest business organization in the region. Joe, you know how important I think your success is, and I would look forward to continue to work with you on this, and I look forward to having you back to talk more about the next steps.
I appreciate you having me, Ted. Thank you for the partnership, the friendship, and I'm really excited about the future. I think this is the timing was right for a lot of these issues, and we're just, you know, chomping at the bit to get going. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Joe. I really do appreciate it. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back with Stephen Levine from RJP Estate Planning. Welcome back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. This is The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt Neely is behind the glass. I hope you stay on KVOI, a Bustos Media station, following this show to listen to Win Tucson with Kathleen Wynn. So if you've been putting off your estate planning, this year could be your last chance to get it done under today's favorable laws. We're joined by Stephen Levine from RJP Estate Planning to explain how now is such a critical time. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Ted. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Appreciate you being with us today. Some people are watching all the headlines and they're all, many are thinking, well, if President Trump's tax bills passes and the state tax exemption stays high, do I really need to do anything?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question. We get it all the time as well, hear it often. Here's the truth, though. For most Arizona families, the estate taxes aren't the biggest risk. It's probably one of the least important of the risks. Even if federal estate tax exemptions stay high, thanks to a new tax bill, it only helps the extreme wealthy. So it doesn't affect most people. The real threat for most people isn't the IRS. It's what is we're talking about, Arizona probate court. That's the blaring threat. Even if the tax laws stay favorable, they don't protect your life savings from getting tied up in probate when you pass away. As I always mention, in Arizona, every state's different. Arizona, if you own a home, have over $75,000 in assets, including bank accounts, investments, your estate must go through probate court unless you have the right legal protections.
So even if you're not paying estate taxes, your family could still end up in court?
Exactly. Because Arizona's low thresholds for probate, estate settlements happen in court more often than people realize. So too many families are caught off guard, either because they delay their estate plan or they assume that a simple will is enough to protect their assets. But a will alone won't keep your estate out of probate court. So your family could still be stuck in court for over a year, lose tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees just to settle your estate. So even worse, probate is public. So that means your assets, your debts, even family disputes can become part of that court record, which further delays your settlement, digging deeper into the family's inheritance. So there's a much better solution that's safe and reliable, and that's what we call a living trust. So it lets your assets pass directly to your loved ones privately, efficiently, without any court involvement. So a trust can also help your family avoid unnecessary stress during an already emotional time.
So even if Trump's tax bill passes, it doesn't protect you from probate court, which doesn't sound like any fun. But it's reassuring to know that with a living trust, your estate can bypass probate and go straight to your family. Now let's talk about what happens if the tax bill doesn't pass. There's talk it may not have the votes. Does that change things?
Sure. So yeah, it does. If Congress doesn't act by the end of this year, 2025, the current tax cuts expire and the estate tax exemption could drop by half, which is a lot. So this means millions of families suddenly find themselves in a taxable territory, facing, you know, up to a 40% tax on the amount above that lowered threshold. We've seen this before. People, they're freaking out. There's this anxiety, this rush to create an estate plan last minute. It's like, I always use the analogy, it's like trying to evacuate a wildfire when it's at your doorsteps. So it's the same thing happens in estate planning. Everybody's calling a lawyer, rushing to get a plan in place. It's risking costly mistakes. So remember, even if you have a first consultation, it can still take 4 to 6 weeks to finalize that plan. That's why it's so important to act now before the rush.
So no matter what Congress does, waiting puts you and your family at risk.
That's right. So whether it's avoiding probate court, preparing for possible tax changes, a living trust as part of a comprehensive estate plan gives you protection and peace of mind. So Here at RJP Estate Planning, we're making it easier than ever. If you're 60 years or over, we offer a 65% discount on the full living trust package. This includes your trust, a will, that's built in the trust. We can go over that when we meet in person. Medical and financial power of attorneys, those are important while you're alive. Say if you're mentally incapacitated, that gives power to whoever you choose, whether it's friends or family members, to act as your medical and financial agent to make those decisions if you can't. Free annual reviews. And to me, probably the most important that offers the most peace of mind is what we call a settlement support package. So that means when that time comes, if you pass away, we meet with the family. It's a free consultation, hold their hands, walk them through the process. And then obviously having the power of attorney documents, all that wrapped together is important to ensure that your finances, medical wishes are protected while you're incapacitated or after death. So give us a call at 520-441-4523 to save that 65% on a living trust package. Call by this Thursday. We have people on the phone ready to make appointments. Call by Thursday, May 8th to secure that 65% discount with RJP Estate Planning. And you know, while he's bragging, RJP Estate Planning's helped. We're up to over 40,000 families in Arizona since 1995. So give us a call, 520-441-4523.
Well, it's important. Don't wait to see what Congress decides. Whether the state tax stays high or gets cut, your estate still needs protection. So I encourage you to call 520-441-4523 by this Thursday to lock in your 65% savings with RJP's Living Trust Package. That's 520-441-4523. Schedule your free consultation with RJP Estate Planning today. Stephen, as always, we appreciate your willingness to come on and your support of our station.
You got it. Thanks, Ted. Have a great day.
All right, Stephen. Have a great week. All right, so Matt, there's something that came up that I wanted to hit on again and get your opinion.
Yep.
Get your opinion. You've got work experience well beyond what you now do in the radio station. The whole city council exploration of taking over in private or making
the electric utility
a public entity. I guess I just don't understand it, because one, it costs $300,000 to do that study, and the study was released a couple weeks ago, got an immediate response from TEP showing the flaws in the study. But I think so often now, if you want a study done, you're going to get the results you want because you're paying for it. and that's not just on the municipality, it's not on the city, but if somebody wants to get clients that value their ability to do studies, they're going to give you the results you want. That study truly looked like one that just put out the statements that they knew the city or
maybe the question is, can we make this happen? And well, yeah, you could make it happen. You can make anything happen. What happens when they do differential rates if you don't live inside the city limits, like they do with water?
And that's one of the problems they found. Great op-ed.
It costs more to send electricity to the foothills.
The op-ed that was in the Arizona Daily Star today, and there were several on several different issues that were really good. So I would encourage you folks to take that either online or take a look at it and read it, because it made some points. And when you've got Boulder, Colorado, of all municipalities, and since I was at the Academy back in the 80s, Boulder was the liberal bastion of Colorado.
Okay.
Colorado's turned more blue since then, but then it was always the place. For 10 years, they had to go back twice to do a half-cent sales tax to fund their effort to take over the local electric company.
Okay.
Now, shockingly, the electric company, as well as the state's overseer of electricity and utilities, didn't go easy. They pushed back. And what they found out was where it really fell apart was when you got to what you just stated. What about all the utility investment that you're trying to get control of that is connected outside the city limits?
Sure.
Because you can't just go in and cut them off.
Right.
You can't just go in and chop them. It creates more problems than you're trying to fix.
Right.
One of the things that I will give the city some credit on is that in their budget, as they're working towards the budgets, they're focusing on their priorities of what we've talked about. And that is what's a municipality's responsibility? And generally, what more importantly, what can't the private sector or the nonprofit world provide. You don't want a privatized or a nonprofit police department force. You don't want private roads. You don't want private parks. That's the stuff you can't do. But utilities, the private sector does a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, good track record.
So it's, I think sometimes we get wrapped up into, you know, facing the big business. And the reality is we need to think about what's best for the community as a whole and the city. And they're doing that better in this budget, yeah. Focusing on what does a municipality need to supply. And yeah. I hope they put this whole conversation on acquiring a utility bed.
So I can buy stock in TEP's holding company and have some sort of influence. I cannot, if I outside of the city, I cannot vote for the people that are messing up the utility. And same thing with the water.
And that's a great point. And that's why regional approach on issues like roads, like utilities, like water is important. And I will continue to push that. So you've spent the morning with Matt Neely and myself on The Morning Voice. Appreciate both of our guests from the chambers to be being with us today. And stay listening to 1030 The Voice, because it's your only trusted local news and talk.
See you next week,
everybody.
Ted.
Have a great week, Matt.